Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Greetings and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Tapson. Just me today, no guest. It's been a long while since I've done a solo rant, and I felt that the time is right for another one because there are a few items in the news, a few articles on a related theme to be more precise, that inspired me to comment upon them, and I thought I'd run with that. The theme is the war on traditional masculinity, and it's no coincidence, I believe, that these articles are clustered around Father's Day. So here we go. Remember when the Wall Street Journal was considered a right-leaning newspaper? Good times. Back on June 14th, it posted this bit of culture war subversion, an article titled, "Why the Bisexual Man is Hollywood's Breakout Star," which approvingly explored why the culture is having what the article called a bi-renaissance of sexual fluidity. The article reads, quote, "These days, there's no keeping Hollywood's gay icons and hetero heartthrobs apart. Appreciated by both men and women, the new male lead is either boldly or just barely bisexual, and he's suddenly everywhere," unquote. Ooh, how titillating. This naughty new trend is apparently exemplified by a number of Hollywood offerings, especially content aimed at Generation Z. I say apparently because I'm not familiar with any of them, maybe because, contrary to the Wall Street Journal writer, I don't appreciate same-sex activity on screen. I don't think I'm in the minority on that. But the Wall Street Journal seems to want people like me to feel like we need to jump on this bi-renaissance bandwagon. Among the shows trying to normalize this trend are HBO's Heated Rivalry, for example, which is apparently about homosexual hockey players. There are shows featuring bisexual protagonists like the one played by Tom Hiddleston, in Amazon's The Night Manager, or in a show called DTF St. Louis, or in the popular period piece Bridgerton. Streaming series such as Heartstopper, The Summer I Turned Pretty, Sex Education, Heartbreak High, What We Do in the Shadows, and Interview with the Vampire are all rife with bisexual storylines, or so I understand. I don't know because I don't watch any of those, and wouldn't if you paid me to. I and the vast, vast majority of Americans have no interest in watching men even make out, much less have explicit sex on camera. But Hollywood doesn't care what most Americans want. Their aim is to normalize subversive behavior. Unless you think I'm picking on non-heterosexuals, let me hasten to add that I also don't find heterosexual activity on screen interesting either. I've had sex. I like it a lot. But I find it boring to watch on screen because 99% of the time, maybe even 100%, sex scenes are completely unnecessary in terms of moving the storyline forward and in terms of moving the audience emotionally. So, heterosexual or otherwise, I don't think any show or movie needs explicit sex. It's cheap and lazy storytelling, and most of the time it's there because the director quite simply is just exploitative and voyeuristic and likes degrading actors on the set. Anyway, the article goes on to say that the message for audiences is that people who are bisexual are by nature so sexual that they will have sex with anybody. I think that this is nothing to be enamored of, and that it signals a perverse obsession with one's animal appetites, which is not something a healthy society gives free rein to. But hey, I guess I'm an old prude, because the article calls this behavior, quote, a new kind of male ideal, unquote. Well, that's pure propaganda. Because it's not a new male ideal, but the left wants you to think that it is, and that you're either a bigot or worse, uncool, for not embracing it. The article continues asking, quote, "Why all the bi now?" unquote. After all, the idea that an outwardly heterosexual man may not be entirely straight has traditionally been viewed as a risk to the heterosexual status quo. The article suggests that bisexuality offers straight women a fantasy corrective to the manosphere, or it may also be a way for Hollywood to make itself hip to young audiences. The article even suggests that playing bisexual may even make hetero maleness somehow sexier, which is laughable nonsense. This is the Wall Street Journal, remember. But mostly, the journal believes on-screen bisexuals simply reflect demographic reality. And here I'm going to read a long stretch directly from the article, which begins like this. Bisexuality is now the fastest growing sexual orientation, with the number of American adults identifying as bisexual tripling since the 90s, and the rate increasing faster among men than among women. Young people's rates of LGBTQ identification have skyrocketed, 22.3% of Gen Z adults compared with 2.3% of boomers, and most of that growth is due to more people identifying as bisexual. Among adults who identify as LGBTQ, the majority, 57.3%, now say they are bi. Compared with earlier generations, millennials and Gen Z are far more likely to identify as bisexual than as gay. Nearly 7% of Gen Z men say they're bisexual, more than twice as many as those who say they're gay. And that's not counting those who prefer more flamboyant monikers like pansexual or sexually fluid. More young men also think of themselves as mostly straight rather than exclusively so. And bisexual behavior doesn't always match bisexual identity. According to a Pew poll, 88% of partnered bisexuals are in heterosexual relationships. Gen Z seems especially inclined toward the view of sexual attraction as being more of on a scale or a spectrum. Okay, that was a lengthy quote directly from the Wall Street Journal. All of this is presented by the journal as a new reality that mainstream America should simply get on board with or be deemed out of touch and stuffy. In a related recent article, Harper's Bazaar magazine online published one called "Why Are So Many Women Falling for Heated Rivalry?" by self-declared gay writer Lewis Staples, referring to the hockey series I mentioned a moment ago. Heated Rivalry, which Staples calls an intensely homoerotic show, follows two closeted hockey players who find themselves embroiled in a secret relationship. Staples estimates there is one super hot sex scene roughly every 10 minutes, so many that Slate has started reviewing them. It doesn't take a genius, he writes, to work out why gay viewers like me are drawn to this show. There are handsome jocks with eight-pack abs and supernaturally round asses, plus there's the enduring fantasy of the locker room hookup, unquote. That's an enduring fantasy? I guess I really am out of touch and uncool. Staples believes that Heated Rivalry's explicit in-your-face sexiness, as he calls it, is an indication that, quote, gay sex is undeniably capturing the zeitgeist, unquote. He goes on to marvel at the number of women who find the show, quote, really hot, unquote, pointing out that almost half of gay male porn is actually consumed by women. And he adds, quote, it's no secret that we're living in an era of heteropessimism, where many women are feeling frustrated and unfulfilled by the interactions they're having with men, unquote. Well, actually, this was a secret to me, but maybe since I left San Francisco nearly 30 years ago, I don't hang out with enough heteropessimists. Another show in this heteropessimistic vein is All Her Fault, starring Dakota Fanning, which just became Peacock's biggest series launch ever. Apparently, the show highlights overstressed, overstretched mothers trying to do it all and frustrated by their immature, irresponsible millennial husbands. Gee, this sounds like really compelling viewing, doesn't it? No wonder I've stopped watching nearly everything but medieval action flicks. And that's not all, as the old infomercial slogan used to go. There was an AI-generated puff piece at the Washington Times in the last week or so about 39-year-old trans actor Elliot Page, formerly known as Oscar-winning actress Ellen Page, an article that falsely identified Page throughout as male. Anyone who has seen Page, either pre- or post-transition, knows that so-called Elliot Page is not remotely masculine and never can be, no matter how deep she tries to pitch her voice or how short and badly she cuts her hair. I'm not saying this to be mean, but Ellen Page has no more grasp of what it is to be a man than I do of what it is to be a woman. Men and women share a common humanity, sure, but Elliot Page was born female, and I was born a male, and to borrow a line from Rudyard Kipling, ne'er the twain shall meet. Neither of us can cross over into the other sex simply by taking hormones, cutting off certain body parts, changing the way we dress or style our hair, and switching up our personal pronouns. the left is always talking about valuing lived experience, but in fact, no man who fancies himself a woman or vice versa can ever have the true lived experience of the other sex. Pretending and demanding that others play along with your delusion is not the same. Witness the short video clip from a podcast episode making the rounds of social media in which Elliot Page offers her take on what healthy masculinity means. Page's appearance on the show was part of her promotional work for a documentary she narrated and executive produced about same-sex behavior across 1,500 animal species. What, that doesn't sound like compelling viewing to you either? Why is it that people obsessed with gender ideology can't create anything but gender propaganda? Tis a puzzlement, as Yul Brynner's King of Siam used to say. Anyway, she absolutely flails helplessly trying to explain her take on healthy masculinity, which is to be expected because she's not masculine and has no idea even how to fake it. She delivers a mess of utterly incomprehensible stream of consciousness, unfinished sentences, and half-thoughts about her gender journey, stuffed with feminine verbal tics, such as the overuse of the word like, and feminine gesticulation with her fragile little hands. From what little I can understand, the upshot is that Page thinks healthy masculinity means resisting the impulse to close oneself off emotionally. She says, quote, "Healthy masculinity, to me, is, or even just something I've felt as, like, transitioning, is like leaning away from whenever there is some sort of impulse or expectation you've put on yourself to, like, shut down, or conform in a way that usually feels like this, like I am closing off," unquote. I don't know what that means, but apparently part of her gender journey means relearning how to present herself, including in photographs. She recalled catching herself starting to suppress expressive behaviors associated with women, such as talking with her hands, smiling too broadly in pictures, and then rejecting that impulse. She said, quote, "And I'm like having that moment where I'm like, oh, should I also not? Should I also be closed off? It's just like, what the F, Elliot? What are you talking about? Like, oh, honey, you're part of the problem," unquote. Again, I don't know what any of that means, but Page eventually concluded with this doozy of a statement, which absolutely proves definitively she knows nothing about masculinity. She said, quote, "I think healthy masculinity could just mean a really good cry," unquote. First off, no straight man says of himself, "Oh, honey." Second, the left's constant drumbeat about masculinity is that it supposedly centers on suppressing one's feminine side, that men think they're not allowed to show emotion, that they're never allowed to cry. In other words, the left believes men are just broken females, and if they could just allow themselves to access their deepest, blubberiest feelings, toxic masculinity would disappear and we would all just live in perfect harmony as fully realized women. Healthy masculinity doesn't mean suppressing emotion. Men get emotional all the time. A man's goal should not be to suppress emotions, but to master them. As a man, it's perfectly fine to express emotion. Have a legitimate reason to cry? Cry! What are legitimate reasons for a man to cry? Well, the death of a loved one, perhaps. The end of the movie Gladiator, maybe, when Russell Crowe is reunited with his family after death. Or stubbing your toe really hard on a table leg on your way to the kitchen in the middle of the night for a snack. Those are legitimate reasons for a man to cry. The problem comes not from expressing emotion, but when you allow yourself to become an emotional mess. Women's natural response to that in a man is to be repelled by it. No one, male or female, wants to see a man fall apart emotionally, because everyone knows that a significant part of being a man means maintaining enough control to be a rock for those who depend on you, your wife, your children, your friends, to keep your wits about you in an emergency, to be at the ready at all times to man your field and protect your loved ones who need to know that they can trust you to keep it together no matter what the situation. That is healthy masculinity, or at least a significant core of it. There's more to it than that, but that's a very essential element. Elliot Page also added that healthy masculinity means attention to something called self-care, such as getting adequate rest, staying hydrated, and making a genuine effort to love themselves. Actually, none of that has anything to do with masculinity. Yes, everybody should get adequate rest and stay hydrated, and having low self-esteem is a serious stumbling block for a man. But making a genuine effort to love yourself is a level of narcissism that is not only unnecessary and irrelevant to being a man, but it's effeminate and self-centered. Healthy masculinity is not about loving yourself. For all of human history, that hasn't even been entirely a feminine thing until the last half century, in which feminism indoctrinated women to make everything about themselves. Keep all this in mind when filmmaker Christopher Nolan's woke desecration of Homer's The Odyssey hits theaters soon, because Ellen, or Elliot Page, reportedly has been cast, incredibly, as one of Odysseus's fellow warriors in the film. Even in a movie based on Greek myth, that stretches credulity past the breaking point. The highlight of all this gender madness came on Father's Day over the weekend, when the New York Times, which always manages to find the most perverse, in-your-face, far-left angle on any American holiday, chose that day to publish a guest essay about a transgender parent coming to terms with being a trans dad. The essay, titled "To My Daughter, My Gender Was Never Complicated," was written by Zach Ellams, a woman now claiming to be male. It centers on Ellams' experience raising a daughter while navigating awkward questions about gender. To add to the pathetic, unserious nature of the concept, it's presented in comic strip form, with illustrations showing the naturally confused, curious child asking pointed questions of her mom or dad, I'm not sure which, in everyday settings like walking down the street or playing at the pool. "How long did you have breasts for, Dad?" the daughter asks in one amateurishly drawn cartoon panel. In another scene, the child asks, "How did you grow a mustache if you were a lady?" Another panel shows the daughter on a playground telling another child, "I want to grow a beard when I grow up." "You can't grow a beard, you're a girl," the other child sensibly replies. "My dad did, and he was a girl," the daughter says. He's actually still a girl, child, but a delusional one, who is setting you on the path to decades of costly therapy. The essay was meant to suggest that, hey, if Ellams' own daughter can accept her narcissistic gender confusion so, quote-unquote, naturally, then what right do you have to criticize her, you uptight binary bigot? The Times was predictably and rightfully blasted for publishing this man-hating crockery on Father's Day. Babylon Bee CEO Seth Dillon wrote, quote, "On Father's Day, the New York Times is celebrating gender-confused mothers. Wokeness may be limping a bit from injuries, but it isn't dead," unquote. Tim Young, a media strategist at the Heritage Foundation, tweeted, quote, "The New York Times reminds us all that they hate actual fathers on Father's Day," unquote. Sean Davis, CEO of The Federalist, wrote, quote, "The New York Times celebrated Father's Day by saluting the real heroes, left-wing gender goblins who think mentally ill women mutilating themselves, mainlining hormone injections, and playing daddy dress-up are the true embodiment of fatherhood," unquote. The point of publishing that provocative piece on Father's Day was precisely to subvert what should have been a day to celebrate the countless men across America who have devoted their lives to building families, sustaining them, providing for them, and doing the difficult and daily work with their wives to raise good, stable, healthy, flourishing children. Ever since Karl Marx, who made the abolition of the nuclear family the centerpiece of his satanic collectivist ideology, the left has made that aim the tip of the spear of the cultural Marxist assault on Western civilization. The New York Times isn't even being subtle about this perversion of Father's Day, its targeting of the nuclear family, by breaking down the traditional understanding of male and female, mother and father, that is held in all cultures throughout all of human history until our present moment, which has been thrown into irrational, divisive confusion by the relentless gender ideologues of the left, who get an erotic thrill, frankly, from the idea of grooming younger generations into their sick anti-family cult. Shame on the New York Times. They should be labeled a hate group. If the corrupt left-wing smear machine known as the Southern Poverty Law Center can label organizations like the Family Research Council and Moms for Liberty hate groups, then the right should be able to condemn the New York Times staff for their anti-family, anti-father hate. As you may know about me, I've written and spoken often over the years about masculinity, because it is a critical front in the culture war. The left knows that if they can undermine traditional manhood, which is the warrior spirit of the nuclear family, the force that forms and defends families and communities, that builds and defends civilization, then they could subvert that first and last line of defense against an all-powerful totalitarian state. I believe reclaiming a warrior masculinity is the key to reviving a flagging Western civilization against its enemies, both foreign and domestic. That's why all the articles I've spoken about today are critical to address, and not just frivolous pop culture silliness. If we can reject the left's assault on masculinity and the family, everything else, will fall into place. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk, and thanks always for listening to The Right Take. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already, and if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you.